Ahoy, mateys! Welcome to the GameBuoy.org video game podcast, your twice-monthly port of call for gaming news and views that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. I'm your host, Captain Spike, and with me, as always, is First Mate Slagkick.
Yarr!
Today is May 10th, 2015, and this is episode 79, Derezzed, a look at the lost games of the digital age. Welcome once again, our lovely and beautiful listeners, to another episode of the GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
This week, we're taking a look at something that's actually been going on for a long time in our beloved hobby that a lot of people have only really become aware of in the last month. That, of course, is the permanent loss of some of our favorite digital content. Boo indeed. So buckle in and get ready for that. But first, we have our usual slate of follow-ups and news bits for your perusal and ours. Slaggy, you want to kick us off?
Very fittingly, we talked about how PT was going to be removed from the PlayStation Store, you know, the PT demo, playable teaser, and that has happened, and Silent Hills is officially canceled.
They're over it. Officially.
Officially. So, man, Konami, what up with you?
Yeah, this was a really big deal in the last few weeks. Basically, after the kerfuffle of, you know, removing PT from PlayStation Network worldwide now, they also completely delisted it. So people who have the license to download it from back when it was available still can't download it anymore. If you have it on your hard drive, cool, you can keep playing. If you do not, there is no longer any possible way to get it. So, obviously, this is actually why we're doing this episode this week. But unfortunately, along with that news, was Konami's official statement, Konami is committed to new Silent Hill titles. However, the embryonic Silent Hills project developed with Guillermo del Toro and featuring the likeness of Norman Reedus will not be continued. In terms of Kojima-san and Del Toro being involved, discussions on future Silent Hill projects are currently underway, and please stay tuned for further announcements. Which, I probably don't have to tell you, is a big steaming pile of bullshit as far as games, public relations work. You never, never, never close a door. You always say, oh, anything could happen in the future, but this, I don't buy that Kojima and Del Toro are actively discussing doing a new Silent Hill project. Like, no, I'm sorry, that's not a thing. This sucks, it's shitty, and I mean, short of Konami looking at getting out of gaming altogether, I can't really understand why they would have taken this move.
Maybe they're going to get bought out by Activision and release yearly installments of Silent Hills games and Metal Gear games, and they're going to be really bad because they're going to be outsourced.
Well, you know, that would still be better than the alternative of losing it completely in some ways.
I just hope we don't have to have a Rest in Peace Konami episode within the next, ever, really, but not looking good.
In nicer news, Capcom has confirmed the download roster and schedule for this year's Mega May event on the Wii U Virtual Console Shop.
AKA, oh, we should probably do something with this IP we have.
Well, especially on Nintendo platforms where Mega Man post Smash is, you know, pretty highly in demand. This week we had the GBA port of Mega Man and Bass.
Mega Man and Bass. Man and Bass.
I'm a big fan of this game. I'm actually a big enough fan that I actually own a Super Famicom cartridge of this game. And I have, in the past, when dating Mega Man fans, imported copies of this game for them. The Super Famicom version is by far the ideal way to play it. Unfortunately, it was never translated into English officially. This GBA port, Mega Man and Bass, is the only way to play this game in English. The level design suffers a little bit on that port, because they didn't change the stage dimensions, and the screen ratio is a different size on the GBA than TV's display is. So there are some jumps where, like, literally, you would just have to, like, make a leap of faith because you're supposed to jump onto a platform that was super visible on a TV.
Leap of faith, leap of faith. Only thing to do is jump over the platform.
You tried. So, in any event, great game. I love it. I actually think it's a super good game. I think that this is going to bring it to the masses a little more. Health, even for listeners of this show, it's a Mega Man game you probably haven't played. Well worth the $8, even with my qualms of this specific port.
A Mega Man game that maybe isn't on your radar, but most definitely should be.
On May 14th, we're going to be getting Mega Man Battle Network 3, Blue/White. On May 21st, we're going to be getting Mega Man 02. And to round the roster out, on May 28th, we're getting Mega Man Battle Network 4, Blue Moon Red Sun.
I still think it would have been funny if Mega Man Battle Network 4 had gotten released before Battle Network 3.
They'd kind of be shooting themselves in the foot. I think generally Mega Man Battle Network 4 is considered the best of the series. My personal favorite is 3, but whatever. Mega Man Zero 2 is a really hell of a great game. Overall, I'll actually be downloading all of these, and for any Mega Man fans out there, I would highly recommend you at least grab Mega Man and Base and Mega Man Zero 2. Saigi, do you want to take this next one?
Yeah, we have some interesting updates in regards to the tribunal system for League of Legends, which kind of just disappeared from my understanding. I'm not a LOL player. I'm just an LOLer. LOL! But, yeah, it was about a year ago that it disappeared, and they just wanted to, you know, refine it. So it was taken back to the shop, so to speak, and Riot has looked at ways that they can reward good behavior and add incentives for actually being nice. Imagine that. And so they're going to be bringing back the tribunal system, and that's apparently happening later this month, so please look forward to it if you are an LOLer.
LOL, LOL, LOL. We also had, and, you know, they came a little bit under fire for this. In the beginning of this month, we had Nintendo putting out a press release regarding the Amiibo retail situation in North America.
I'd like to think it was because of our episode spotlighting the supply and demand issues.
And, you know, the TLDR of the statement was basically, we recognize people are having a hard time finding these products. We are trying to meet the demands of fans, consumers, and retailers. But basically, it was kind of perfect from, like, that, like, standpoint of, like, corporate doublethink, where, like, everything has to be, like, synergistic and buzzwords. They basically used a lot of words to say basically nothing. This press release basically says, yes, we know you want Amiibo. Yes, we are going to continue selling you Amiibo. You know, they did talk about how, you know, there are some plans on the table to maybe do new printings of out-of-stock Amiibo. You know, we may see some Amiibo reallocated from other territories and reissued. So, you know, I guess in a way they said something, but the reality is that it basically said, you know, if you want Amiibo, bitch, better look for Amiibo.
Very much.
Again, you know, for all the reasons detailed in last week's episode, I'm not really hating on them for that. I think that they have a good thing going, and as long as people who are currently buying Amiibo continue to buy Amiibo, they're making money. And in fact, you know, something that I don't really have slated to talk about this week, because there wasn't a lot of news associated with it, Nintendo did report, you know, that they're finally back in making good money. Their financial figures for last financial quarter hit, and they had made something like a $236 million profit last operating quarter. So, you know, clearly things are looking up for them. I know a lot of people are pointing out that they were consistently in the red for a while. No, they're back in the black, and they're doing well in the black. So, to me, if I were Nintendo, I wouldn't want to spoil the Amiibo market. And I'm sorry to say that. I know there are a lot of people who I talk to on Twitter and stuff who definitely think I give Nintendo too much credit for a solid business plan, and that I'm not focused enough on consumers. And that might be true. I definitely think it sucks. I feel super bad for everyone I know who doesn't have the Amiibo they want. But if I were in Nintendo's shoes, I don't know that I would do anything very different.
And, you know, we're just trying to keep on Nintendo's good side so we can eventually join the Nintendo Treehouse. JK.
You just want to do that so that you can do sex things.
Not even. I just want to cuddle with them in the Treehouse all day. Speaking of doing well in the black, the Batman Arkham games have been, you know, really popular. And, of course, we all know that Arkham Knight is coming in June, I believe, right? Is that the release date? It's coming this summer.
That is correct, June.
And some of the details from the season pass have been announced, most notably that there is a DLC expansion called Batgirl, A Matter of Family. Not too many details have been released. We don't know if it's Barbara Gordon or if it's Cassandra Cain. What we do know is that it's a side story removed from the main narrative, so it's very possible that, you know, it could be any matter of Batgirl things.
So we do know, actually, that it is going to be Barbara Gordon Batgirl rather than Cassandra Cain. And this is actually newer information that wasn't in this specific article. But I'm super into this because, or I should say I was super on top of this, because I'm a huge Cassandra Cain fan. That run of Batgirl was probably my favorite thing DC had published in the last 20 years. All of the comic book nerds listening to our show are just probably like, yes! Because Cassandra Cain was so badass before DC fucked her up. But in any event, unfortunately, this is going to be a Barbara Gordon Batgirl story. But, you know, I'm still actually a lot more interested in Arkham Knight than I was before. I was thinking I would probably end up skipping this. I have a lot of problems with how this game is structured and how the story goes from what we've seen. Because, you know, I'm a continuity nerd to some degree. But now, I mean, playing as Batgirl, that's actually super, super exciting to me. So I'm kind of interested again.
You mean the draw for you isn't the legendary Batmobiles with themed tracks where you can race with the different Batmobiles?
I'm not into that, and I'm also not into the Batmobile having a rocket launcher that you get points for combo killing dudes. Like, that's not what Batman's about.
Yeah, I feel like totally having a Gretchen Wieners moment. That's not what Batman is about.
We should totally just stab Batman.
Wait, no. For those of you who were curious about the Last of Us DLC chapter Left Behind, which of course focused on Ellie and her BFF, you'll be able to get that in just a few days on May 12th for $10. And, I mean, by the time you listen to that, it's probably going to be available. So, you know, if you weren't really interested in the main narrative arc of The Last of Us, but you really wanted to...
And I wouldn't blame you.
But you really wanted to, you know, invest in this really well-received DLC chapter, then you will be able to do that. And I'm not going to give spoilers, but, you know, something...
Sapphic love.
Okay, yeah, it's a little spoilery.
We also have word here from Nintendo's financial results that I briefly mentioned. According to Satoru Iwata-san, Nintendo's mobile partnership with DNA is going to be sort of spearheaded by Hideki Kono-san,
Who
has been producing the Mario Kart series since Mario Kart DS. So that is, you know, Kono-san was the producer on Mario Kart Wii, Mario Kart 7, and Mario Kart 8.
Yeah, and even, you know, a few issues with Wii aside, you know, those have all been overall great games.
Yeah, this is actually really exciting to me. Obviously, I'd prefer Kono-san be working on Wii U games and NX games, whatever NX turns out to be. But I do have a lot of faith that these mobile games, with Kono-san sort of heading up the effort, I actually think these games are probably going to be really well-designed, fun experiences. And, you know, while for console warsy purposes, I don't want Nintendo making great games on other platforms, I definitely think that Nintendo having a foothold in the mobile space with strong content has more benefits than negatives overall.
Indeed. I mean, you just think about the level of polish that went into Mario Kart 8 and that will hopefully continue to see supported.
Absolutely. We also have something really interesting and cool here is that IGN does this thing called IGN First, where basically they take a month and focus on, like, a single game. They get, like, the first look at a game and basically get to handle all of the reveals for a game.
Something Money Hat?
That's probably true, but at the same time, I think there's benefit here. I actually like sort of this level of deep coverage, lots of depth in what they're covering and talking about, rather than shallow articles. I mean, reality is someone probably did Money Hat this, but the trade-off is we, as, you know, gamers, we're going to get a lot of information from, you know, people who are familiar with Rock Band as a series, talking about the new features, talking about, you know, being the first
definitely,
hands-on
and you know,
with the game. I think on May 15th, they're going to be streaming the first song announcements. So we'll have that next week when we record. This is, you know, this is really cool.
And you know, it's definitely an improvement over the usual slate of IGN articles like Happy Mother's Day from Deadpool.
You shady bitch. Anyway, there were some gameplay images. So for the first time, we got to see sort of what Rock Band is going to look like in, you know, 1080p HD.
Man, I can't wait to make
super good.
I can't wait to make Snake Daddy recreated in Rock Band 4.
You know, and basically they just talked in the first few articles that they've posted so far. They've talked about how they're going back and adding vocal harmonies to the entire existing catalog of songs, which is going to be really cool. They have a new drum fill feature that they're doing for all songs and all legacy DLC that's really going to change the way that, like, that drum fill works for your overdrive power as a drummer. It sounds like they're really working really hard on doing some really cool stuff. For vocal, they're changing it so that, like, literally it's going to, like, detect your key, and as long as you're singing on key, it's not really going to care about what your pitch is. So people who, you know, maybe can stay on key but don't have, like, a super strong falsetto will now be able to do, you know, some of the songs that were really, really difficult for men with deeper voices to do. I am not talking about myself at all in this case.
So those of us who like to Christina it up and be like,
so that's a thing you just did. Anyway, in case you can't tell, we're super excited for Rock Band 4, and honestly, we're really excited for IGN's Rock Band 4 coverage. So,
hashtag
words I never expected to say, but, you know, I would expect to hear a lot more from us about Rock Band 4 and IGN's coverage of Rock Band 4 throughout the remainder of the month.
Let's be real, you're going to be hearing about Rock Band 4 pretty much always and forever, Alyssa Edwards.
In release date buoy news, we have word that Attack on Titan for 3DS will be available for download on May 12th. So
that's
probably
soon.
By the time you're listening to this.
If you buy it, then you can get a theme, Attack on Titan theme. It looks pretty cool.
Excellent, excellent. Well, I'll be buying it, so cool. And last, but certainly not least, we have word that Mighty No. 9 is going to be hitting on Xbox One, PS4, Wii U, PC, Mac, Linux, Xbox 360, and PS3 on September 15th. The Vita and 3DS versions will be hitting later.
Aw, that's okay, though.
This news actually came about when they announced that they are going to be releasing a physical version of the game. All this time, you know, Mighty No. 9 has been slated to be a digital release. Basically, Concept have paired with publisher Deep Silver to distribute a physical version of the game as well. And with the money that Concept got from Deep Silver for this arrangement, they're actually going to be releasing free DLC for all of the digital buyers and people who backed the game previously.
Hells yeah.
So while I've seen a lot of negativity out on the internet about, oh, Kickstarter games shouldn't sell out to publishers, I see this as a win-win. We got an Inafune Mega Man clone, or, you know, Mega Man successor, funded, we got it published, and now we're getting more content than we originally paid for. I don't really care what your thoughts are on, you know, investing or what have you. To me, we're getting a pretty good return for our money here. I'm excited to play it, and if you're playing games for the right reasons, you probably should be too, unless, you know, you think the game looks shitty, which you're certainly welcome to do. But if you're excited for this game, don't be worried that, like, oh, Concept sold out. Like, no, this is how you succeed in games in 2015.
Yeah, like, if Deep Silver is willing to continue investing in Concept, then that means we're going to continue to see great things from Inafune-san.
Right? Like, we could very well see other Mighty No. 9 games, and I see that as a good thing, as long as Mighty No. 9 is as
Mighty
good as
No. 9 too.
Right? Alright, well, with all that having been said, I guess it's time for...
News. 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 Oh my god. News. In an interview with Famitsu, Sweary65 announced that the PC release of D4, Dark Dreams Don't Die, Season 1 will be on June 5th. It will cost $14.99. And there's also a teaser screenshot available, which we'll link to you over on GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
From Season 2 of D4.
You know, this news is exciting for two reasons. Swery65 had talked in the past about how, you know, they had a PC version of Dark Dreams Don't Die running, but that they didn't know if Microsoft was actually going to let them release it. So it's very exciting to see, not just that it's releasing, but that it's also releasing soon. Even more exciting is, you know, that the fate of Season 2 of Dark Dreams Don't Die was kind of in question, because, you know, Dark Dreams Don't Die unfortunately was not super successful on the Xbox One platform. So to see that Season 2 has been greenlit and that, you know, they're teasing it and that it's coming along, to me is really, really super great news.
Yeah, and people who maybe were kind of turned off by the Kinect controls will be happy to know that, you know, you don't have to do that.
We also had a surprise announcement of Five Nights at Freddy's 4, the final chapter. This is apparently going to be the last Five Nights at Freddy's game, and the teaser image, which we will link to over at GameBuoy.org, is actually kind of terrifying.
Yeah, I'm surprised that, you know, this is going to be the final one, because they've kind of got a good thing going there, but, you know, something oversaturation.
In Japan, Sega released a new mobile game last month. It is a free-to-play game, but rather than using a necessarily, like, really gimmicky and, like, player-exploitative system in order to bring people into the fold to spend money, their gimmick here is that it's just a plot-driven JRPG that they're really passionate about, expecting that people are going to want to see all the way through. So the game has like a sort of basic, almost like tactics system of combat. It does have some like character recruit mechanics, but it's largely almost like a mix of like Tactics Ogre and the army battles from Suikoden. And I'm really effing excited about this, like along with like a deep like plot. Like that to me is exciting.
And this game is called
Hortensia Saga,
which sounds like a really like unfortunate name for a young girl. My parents named me Hortensia Saga.
Anyway, assuming they get that out in North America, and I'm hoping they do, you'll definitely be hearing more about it from us. In really exciting news, the folks at Playtonic Games, Playtonic Games, of course, being formed from a bunch of
Playtonic.
What did I say?
No, I was saying Playtonic.
Oh,
it's
I see.
It's a play on words.
I thought you were correcting me. Yeah, so a bunch of people from Playtonic Games, who used to work at Rare, announced their new project, which is called Yooka-Laylee. This, of course, is something that they had been teasing for some number of months on social media, but they launched with a full-on Kickstarter that had some really great concept art, like video of what the game is probably going to look like, what their goal is, and it is basically a follow-up on Banjo-Kazooie. It really looks like a Banjo-Kazooie sequel. It's hell of pretty. The character designs to me are super, super, super adorable.
It's not Duck Hunt, the platforming game, but hey, this is probably even better, honestly.
In some ways, it very well may be. It literally hit its Kickstarter goal of what it needed within literally like 20 minutes. It started with a goal of the American equivalent of $270. They are a
$270,000.
Okay, $270,000. I'm sorry, I assumed the thousand was assumed, but I really honestly shouldn't have. I've been doing finance work at work, and, like, that's just not how we talk about numbers.
Okay.
In any event, they're now in the, like, 2-point-something million range.
Yeah, I mean, like, almost 10 times.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm super excited for it. They're hitting their stretch goals left and right, and people are really passionate about this game. They appear to be people who are going to get this game made. If you are open to kickstarting, I would recommend you check it out. And honestly, even if you're not, I'd recommend you check it out, because this is probably one you're going to want to buy when it does hit on all of the various stores and consoles when it comes out.
Man, it's just, you know, something studios not taking advantage of their IP and then original creators and stuff going and making revivals, huh?
Yeah, we're seeing a lot of that these days. That's something we may want to talk about here on the show in the future.
Yeah, that would be a good episode topic.
Maybe not. But we'll see. We'll see. We also have word here that the long since thought lost sequel to the old PC classic Chips Challenge is finally releasing. Chips Challenge 2 was originally supposed to release back in 1991.
Wow.
Those of you who were gaming on your Windows 3.1 machines probably remember Chips Challenge. I actually do remember it from that era. And, yeah, Chips Challenge 2 finally releasing after working through a bunch of trademark humps and hurdles for the last 20 years. Well, okay, 15 years, because I know you always call me out on dates. Is going to be hitting Steam on May 29th for a retail price of $4.99. There will also be a Chips Challenge 2 level editor sold as DLC for $2.99. And the original game, Chips Challenge, originally released in 1989, will be getting a Steam release for $1.99.
Wow.
For those of you interested in what old Windows gaming used to be like, I'd recommend this. The game itself is actually quite a bit of fun.
Hopefully old Windows gaming without the, like, extensive compatibility issues.
Oh, this was before that.
Oh, okay.
Disney Infinity 3 has officially announced. This is Disney Infinity 3 Star Wars, as
yes. It's
called, much like Disney Infinity 2 was called Marvel Superheroes. We have a pretty great cover here from Game Informer, where you can see some of the new characters that are getting figures this time around. We have characters from that.
Actually, this is from Infinity Inquirer.
I'm actually looking at the cover of Game Informer magazine.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, like,
the article is posted on Infinity Inquirer. You're quite right. But the magazine cover, it has Ultron, it has a Hulkbuster Armor Iron Man, it has Obi-Wan Kenobi, Han Solo, Chewbacca, Princess Leia, Darth Vader, Darth Maul, Ahsoka, Yoda, new Mickey Mouse, Korra from Tron, and that weird blue-haired pixie girl from that Pixar movie about feelings.
Oh, yeah. Is that the one who's voiced by Amy Poehler?
I didn't know that. It makes me want to see that movie.
Yeah.
In any event, Disney Infinity 3.0 is going to be coming to PlayStation 4, Xbox One, PC, Wii U, PlayStation 3, Xbox 360, iOS, and Android this fall. The starter pack is going to have a retail price of $64.99, and they're going to be releasing a new batch of power discs, but this go around, the power discs will not be in blind bags.
Wow.
Yeah, so this is really exciting. For the various different game modes, they're going to be working with Sumo Digital on the racing mechanics, which Sumo Digital, you're probably familiar with for their work on Sonic and Sega All-Stars Racing. The Star Wars arcade-like gameplay stuff is being done by United Front Games, who you're probably familiar with from Sleeping Dogs.
And
combat engine is once again being done by Ninja Theory. So, you know, they're actually Nintendo, lol. Disney's really going all out with this one. They're really recruiting some really great studios to put together this game.
Disney doing it right.
I sure think so.
So, hey, bro.
Sup, bro?
You want to go pop some ollies and do some kickflips and other cool skating tricks, dude?
Yeah, I think I'd rather just sit at home and play Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 5.
What? Are you for real, Prosif? Because Pro Skater 4 came out in 2002.
Yep, I am absolutely true. Absolutely true. I'm absolutely serious.
You're absolutely true, bro.
PlayStation 4, Xbox One are slated later this year to get a sequel to Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 4. This is officially called Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 5, and it's being developed by Robomoto and Disruptive Games. PS3 and Xbox 360 will be getting ports shortly thereafter. For those of you who sort of lost interest in the Tony Hawk series as it went on, this is meant to be like a return to roots to those first four core titles gameplay. So you won't be seeing any of like the downhill stuff or like the underground stuff. Like, this is going to be straight like you selecting a track, doing your chains of combos and stuff, having your ollies, doing your whatever balancey stuffs. In any event, I'm super excited. I love the old Tony Hawk games, and this appears to be a new one. So
yeah, I'm honestly super on board. I can't wait to make a super stud bro skater and kick flip and ollie, and those are the only two moves I actually know from skating.
I'm really hoping that it doesn't have a character creator.
Really?
Yeah.
Just because you don't want me to spend like 5 hours being like, Captain Spike, is he look sexy enough? Like, would you see him at the skate park and be like, hey?
That having been said, they have confirmed that the game will have a skate park creator. So it's
okay,
seems
that's
likely
awesome.
We will also have character creators.
Do you know what we should make?
Other games in the series have had skate park creators, and some of the community parks have been hella cool. So
do you know what we
it's
going to
be exciting.
Skate buoy.
Skate buoy. LOL. Yeah, we'll do a whole episode on skating games. We'll just talk about skate and skate or die and 720.
See, I just meant make a skate park in the game called Skate Buoy.
Oh, we can do that. Can it have pools in the shape of like a skull and crossbone, like a Jolly
I
Roger?
Hope so. Can you do that?
I would assume.
I want it to be like a half pipe that's like a pirate ship.
Capcom surprised and released the PSN PS1 Classics download of The Misadventures of Tron Bonn. This, of course, is a game that you would often see selling on eBay for, you know, $200 to $400. So to be able to get it for like $6 off PSN is quite a steal. It is available now for PlayStation 3, PSP, and PS Vita.
Man, that's almost like the opposite of our topic today.
It really is. It really is. We also got word from the Pokemon Company that a level 55 Dragonite will be distributed via GameStop stores in the US from June 22nd to July 12th. This level 55 Dragonite will be available for Pokemon X, Pokemon Y, Pokemon Omega Ruby, and Pokemon Alpha Sapphire.
The moveset is Dragon Dance, Extreme Speed, Outrage, and Hurricane, and it's leveled at a perfect level for your Elite Four battling.
So I actually wasn't going to go into all of those details because I was going to let you cover this last news story, but because you did that, nope, I'm doing it now.
Aww.
Okay, you can do it.
No, you can do it.
Nintendo is coming to Universal Studios theme parks. At the end of this Nintendo finance meeting that I was talking about, where their financial results for the last quarter came out, Iwata-san announced that they're working with Universal Theme Parks to do immersive experiences and major attractions at the Universal theme parks.
Oh,
they
can't
will feature
wait.
Nintendo's most famous characters and highlight their most well-known games. So far, at least, they're not talking about a full-on specific Nintendo theme park, but from the sound of it, it's going to be a little bit more like the Wizarding World of Harry Potter.
Oh my god, if they at least even just do a little land focused on Nintendo, I'm like so there. I'm there even if it's just like Kirby's Air Ride coaster, and that's it.
Yeah, well, it sounds like that's the kind of thing we're going to be getting. For those of you, of course, who might be worried, you know, oh, what is Universal Studios doing with Nintendo? It's worth mentioning that Universal Studios Japan has actually worked with Capcom for many, many years on Monster Hunter events,
yeah.
Resident Evil events. They've done, like, entire rides based on these games.
We got the Magic Mountain Gore Magala coaster, right?
Oh, yeah, there's that, too.
Road trip, by the way.
So, you know,
man,
this is
just
really something to be excited about.
Oh, what if they have a children's section and it's Baby Park?
That would be amazing.
Some inspiration from, like, the theme park-themed Mario Party boards. And if there's not a coaster where you go into a Mario pipe, it's like, and then you're inside, and it's like,
I don't even care. I just want it to be Nintendo Land. Like, I want it to be themed on Nintendo Land and look like you're walking
into
Nintendo
Land. Oh, and Monita.
Have Monitas there, like, where you're going to go to your little monitors to get, like, attraction information. Yeah, I want them to just do a Nintendo Land GDI.
Can they hire us as creative consultants, please?
Anyway, that's about it for our news this week, but unfortunately we do have a little bit of
Doom and Gloom.
This is my least favorite kind of news. You know, we have talked a lot of shit here on the show about Spark Unlimited. They're the developers behind Lost Planet 3, which is actually secretly kind of good. It has a surprisingly compelling story. Legendary and the shit-tacular Yaiba Ninja Gaiden Z, which we were really excited about until we played it. Unfortunately, they are no longer making games, and they have laid off all of their employees. The Spark Unlimited closure was unfortunately first noticed by a poster on Gaff, and you know, when I saw that thread that morning, my stomach just dropped completely. To see that a developer, well, even one like Spark Unlimited, has closed their doors completely and laid everyone off, especially so suddenly, man. I am so sorry to hear this. It is absolutely horrible news, because you know, for all that we do sometimes, and have sometimes LOL'd Spark Unlimited, you know, back in the day, we've done that to all kinds of studios that have then turned around and developed games like, you know, Way Forward, who we absolutely love Way Forward now, but they started making awful games. You know, there was that studio, you know, Double Helix was one that we all were shitting on, and then, you know, they ended up getting Killer Instinct out, they ended up getting Strider out, and it was just like, man, these games are great. And I was hoping Spark Unlimited was gonna make a turnaround, because every dev, even the worst dev, is only one great game, one great product cycle where it all clicks and they finally get like a working pipeline together from being a good developer. And I hoped Spark was going to get there, and I'm really sad to see that it didn't. Our hearts and thoughts go out to them. I am so, so sorry to hear this, and I hope that everyone who worked there can find gainful employment quickly.
Yeah, that's always a sad announcement. And some bummer news, but nothing that should be too super worrisome, because it's kind of natural. Of course, you know, every quarter, Activision Blizzard does its quarterly call and all that. And we have seen a drop in subscriptions from World of Warcraft from 10 million to 7.1 million. So, you know, definitely dipping down to those, not quite to those Pandaria numbers, but, you know, I think a lot of people just spending a lot more time on the other options that a Blizzard's putting out, like, you know, Heroes of the Storm, Hearthstone, and that sort of thing.
You know, it's always worrisome when an online game drops literally a million people a month, which is what was happening here. That 10 million number was the December 31st number, and the 7.1 million was the March 31st number. So over 3 months, they lost 2.9 million subscribers. That is catastrophic for any game other than World of Warcraft. Most MMOs never even have 2.9 million subscribers to lose in the first place.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's worrisome in that it's a huge number. But, like Slaggy says, in this case, WoW in a lot of ways has almost morphed into being a gateway drug to getting people on the Blizzard launcher, where you're going to be playing all of the Blizzard free-to-play games, Heroes of the Storm, Hearthstone, StarCraft II's, like, main, just, like, core game play part is now a free-to-play, although you don't get all the campaigns and stuff with it. You know, obviously signing up for the Overwatch beta. And make no mistake, these free-to-play games are huge moneymakers for Blizzard. I haven't seen a lot of numbers, but Heroes of the Storm and Hearthstone, while not getting hard numbers, they have both really indicated that they are performing ahead of expectation. And you can kind of tell that by how much content they're constantly getting for people to purchase and consume.
And, you know, we may see with the recent introduction of the WoW token, those people who are, you know, good at doing the economy grind, not having to pay for subscriptions, might see a lot of people coming back saying, hey, I'm going to play the AH and not have to charge my CC.
Yeah, yeah, quite possibly. So, you know, this is bummer news in that they lost a lot of subs, but I'm not actually worried about it.
It's totally the natural ebb and flow for World of Warcraft.
Well, it is
but
not.
It kind of does beg.
It is not the natural ebb and flow, because this is by far the fastest drop off they've ever had after an expansion. Like,
oh,
bar
I guess,
none.
I guess it did just come out in the late fall, didn't it?
That it can't, yeah, I mean, it's only been out for what, like 4 or 5 months?
That's true. So, I mean, I do see the need for Blizzard to kind of rethink their expansion strategy, maybe. And,
yeah,
you know smaller, more frequent patches, you know, really maybe is the answer.
Well, even they have been saying for years that they want to get there, but they're not there yet, and it's starting to hurt them, I think.
Because, I mean, if people could just have new content, then they would keep playing. But, I mean, really, I think every MMO kind of has that, you know, risk.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, well, that's it for our doom and gloom, but we do have some saucy news over in
controversial.
So this one is going to be so controversial just by the nature of, you know, the group of people involved. There was apparently going to be, or, you know, started to be a Gamergate meetup at a bar in Washington, D.C., but there was a bomb threat called in. Now, of course, those of you who listen to the show know our position on the whole internet movement that is Gamergate. That said, any sort of gathering, whether it's gamers or not, you know, calling in a bomb threat is not an appropriate thing to do. You know, we're not straight up saying, oh, it was SJWs, although, I mean, I'm sure that's what is floating around. But, I mean, clearly, regardless of who was involved with the threat, it's bad. Even, you know, like I said, you know very clearly where we stand. And that we, you know, largely find this movement toxic.
Yeah, like, that doesn't come into play here. Like, I absolutely agree with you, Slykick. Like, I am not pro-Gamergate. Like, just full tilt, flat out. I'm comfortable making that statement. It is not appropriate to call in a bomb threat because they're meeting somewhere. Everyone has the right to assemble as long as they're doing so respectfully, they're not causing active damage. Like, that's something that's important in this country. Especially right now with all of the goings-on that have been happening across the country this year. Like, no, we don't need to make more
right
drama or trouble for anyone.
You know, I think
people in situations where SWAT teams can be called. Like, no.
I think that Kotaku really summed this up well. They said, our own distaste for Gamergate's methods and social media campaigns have been no secret, and many members of Gamergate have actively worked to destroy Kotaku. A bomb threat against any gathering of people is nonetheless deplorable. It is unfortunate to see some of the head, you know, even though Gamergate isn't run by anyone, blah, 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 you know, there are certain individuals, and there's already, you know, a lot of the more prominent voices in the movement are saying, oh, it was a bomb threat from feminists.
That's a surprisingly difficult sentence to say. A bomb threat from feminists?
It is.
Bomb threat from feminists.
And I mean, I would certainly hope that wasn't the case, but you know,
whether it was or wasn't, whoever did it, you fucked up. This was not an appropriate thing to do. And you know,
right.
I'm sorry, I'm not a Gamergator, but these people have every right to meet up and discuss whatever the hell they want. How dare anyone call in a bomb threat on them? Like, Jesus Christ, people. What the fuck?
Right. I mean,
if you're against Gamergate, this is the kind of shit you should be against because they've done it to other people.
Yeah. This is why, you know, I feel like a lot of people have said, you know, if you are one of the people who actually wants to, you know, push for ethics in gaming journalism and that sort of thing, then disassociate yourself from, you know, that particular terminology, you know, and find positive ways to advocate your voice. Because, you know, I'm not going to sit here and speculate, but we all know that, you know, there are some insidious roots for this movement, whether, you know, people choose to, you know, acknowledge it or not. And, you know, I think it would be very unsurprising to find that this threat came from the same sorts of people who are making, you know, the swatting and the doxing and all of that.
Something, 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 watch the world burn. It's sad. It's sad. Anyway,
yeah,
I guess
this is gaming
in
2015.
In this case, we are on Gamergate's side, and I'm sorry that this happened to those people. That tasted a little bitter, but it is what it is. We also had here the controversial actions taken by ArenaNet against a well-known player in Guild Wars 2. Now, this player supposedly was a cheater using all kinds of exploits to PvP and really just dominate the game for weeks at a time. Basically, Guild Wars 2, creator ArenaNet, took over this game's character, got him naked, and, like, shamed him in the game, one of the city's, like, open public areas, before then killing him by making him jump off of a high tower to his death, and then systematically deleted each of his characters while banning them individually and locking this player out of his account permanently. You know, here's my thing. I get that they probably thought they were doing something cute or funny or LOL, this guy's a dick. I don't really think that using shame against someone is ever the correct tactic. I'm not really into, like, oh, this guy cheated, so we should shame him and get him naked in the town square so that people can point and laugh as we jump him off a tower to kill him. No, like, that's gross, it's beneath you. Just lock his characters, ban him, and be done. Like, even to put him, like, public like this, it leaves a sour taste in my mouth. It's the kind of thing that probably should be funny. I'm sure some of the other podcasters, even when within our own circle, are gonna say, oh, LOL, Spike takes things too serious. But I do. This is unnecessary.
I think as a good counterpoint, look at what Riot is trying to do with the Tribunal Council and stuff, and actually, you know, find positive solutions to undesirable gameplay.
And that's really my thing, is like, they're gonna, hey, look at this hacker, we're stringing him up for everyone to see. It's just gross to me. It's very similar to me to a public execution, and that's not my thing either.
What if something similar happened to gold spammers?
See, I wouldn't be into that either. I just want them gone. I don't want them to get notoriety and get fame,
remember,
have their names put out there. Like, this guy's going to get some positive attention from this, too. You know, trolls and people out there who are going to see articles about this are going to be like, oh, man, they really got that guy. I'm going to follow his YouTube. I want to see what he has to say about this. Or they're going to be like, oh, man, I want that to happen to me. I better learn what he did so that I can do it, so that now they're going to publicly execute my characters. Like, no, this is just, to me, it creates a system of escalation and all kinds of negative feedback feeding in on negative feedback. It's like a loop, and I just don't think anything beneficial is gained from it other than a cheap laugh at someone else's expense. I'm not feeling it.
Remember when gold spammers would do this to themselves? Like, they would kill themselves and spell out, like, free gold, or, you know, Susan Express?
I do. And I do want to point out...
I'm totally sidebarring.
I do want to point out that Kotaku, whom, you know, we're going to link you to over on GameBuy.org.
GameBuy.org!
They did point out that, you know, some people are not feeling these actions and thought that ArenaNet went and did something unprofessional, and that, you know, they should be spending less time focusing on creating, quote-unquote, a humiliating spectacle, and spending more time sealing the holes that let hackers into their game in the first place. And that's about how I feel about it.
Yeah. Well done, Kotaku.
We also have controversial news, and this is finally one where I'm not on the unpopular opinion side, where gamers are getting randomly banned in Dark Souls 2. As far as we know, it may be because people are running a fan-made patch called Dark Souls 2 Fix that addresses several glaring issues that From Software has yet to address. Now, the community thinks that if they're using Dark Souls 2 Fix on their PC version of the game, which is obviously where this is happening, what it primarily does is fixes a durability glitch that ties the durability of your sword to the frame rate you're running, so that, you know, if you're running at the 30 frames a second that the game is programmed for, okay, you collide with a wall once, you take one durability. But because of the way that the animations are coded, if the game is updating 60 frames a second and you have, you know, 2 frames of wall collision, you're actually losing 2 durability points. And if you're running unlocked on your PC, so you're running some ridiculous 120 frames a second, well, then you're taking 4 points of durability loss for each of those frames where your sword is in collision with the wall. People are using these patches to fix that, to correct that, so you only lose the 1 durability point. And, like, that's cool and that's cute, but basically it appears to be getting caught by the Dark Souls 2 server team as people hacking, modifying, or exploiting their game, which, strictly speaking, isn't wrong. So, you know, this is one of those things where I appreciate what people are doing, I appreciate why they're playing the game the way they are, because that is clearly poor design. Like, it's not something that they meant to have happen. But, still, you are modifying the game. And it's funny because the modder who created the game keeps saying, basically, you know, oh, my game can't be, or my patch can't be detected, it can't be what's at fault here. But a lot of people who are getting banned say that Dark Souls 2 Fix is the only mod they have ever used with the game. And given the way that the patch actively changes values, it actually does cause a inequity in online play. If you have a weapon that isn't taking durability loss the way other people's weapons are, like, that actually is an unfair advantage. So I wouldn't be that surprised if it actually was dinging the server as, you know, unexpected behavior. Like, you know, if the game is running a check and it expects you to be losing multiple durability points when you're only losing one, I see how that could be caught. Why does this gentleman who made this patch think it couldn't be? In any event, the long-term solution here is that supposedly we are going to be seeing the Dark Souls 2 get patched to fix issues like this, so hopefully people won't need to be using Dark Souls 2 Fix in the first place anymore. And many people say that this is only actually a soft ban anyway. They're not having their entire game locked out or whatever. So, you know, they're just having some issues, and overall, hopefully this is gonna blow over.
Yeah, let's hope so.
And do you want to take this last one, Slaggy?
Yeah, so this kind of leads right into our discussion. Sega has announced that it's going to be pulling certain mobile games that do not any that no longer meet its standards, but it's not saying which ones will be affected yet. So they're not saying exactly what these standards are that are not being met, but that maybe they might be put back on. So it's just really vague and kind of an uncomfortable taste. But the good news is that if you have one of the offending games, they won't, like, delete it from your device.
And, you know, I want to say, I, on a fundamental level, have a problem with the removal of games from the marketplace. We're going to be talking about that a little bit in a few minutes. But I do want to applaud Sega for getting in front of the other part of that and really saying, you know, if you love these games and you already have them downloaded, it's fine. You'll be able to re-download them and play until the game becomes incompatible with your latest phone operating system or hardware. I think that's actually really fair to say, you know, we're not going to update this game anymore, but we're not going to pull it so completely that you can't still download it if it's in your download history. I really respect Sega getting in front of that. And, you know, my only real problem with this, per se, is that I have really strong feelings about, you know, preservation of games in the digital age. I still have NES games, like, some of them really awful, but I can still play all of the games I have cartridges for. Like, straight up, all of the Nintendo games that I bought that I still have, I can still play. We're entering a world now where we are seeing games that you buy or games that maybe you want to buy but you forget about and then don't get to and then it's pulled and then bam, you can never play that game ever. You can never buy it. You can never purchase it. Maybe you, in some cases you can pirate it, but in some cases even that is just not an option. If you just missed the game in its limited window of availability, bam, you will never get to have that experience. And that to me, as someone who, you know, is really passionate about games and gaming, that's something I find very unpleasant. So, I mean, credit to Sega for giving people a heads up ahead of time. If you haven't played Crazy Taxi City Rush and you think maybe it's one that's going to get pulled, I would recommend you download it now. As an example, and, you know, Crazy Taxi City Rush is not really that bad. It's not super good, but it's not that bad. But I just love that they're taking this tack of communicating with their fans, communicating in particular about, you know, these games are going to be remaining available for download if they're already in your download list. I think there's a lot of value to this approach to delisting, and if you have to delist a game, I think this is really the way to do it.
Yeah.
So, with that having been said, let's talk about delisting, which is, delisting is sort of the terminology that's generally used for when a game is listed for sale on a digital store and is then unlisted, you know, so like, it's the digital store equivalent of a game going out of print. So, you know, the reason why we're talking about games being delisted this week is, of course, the well-discussed at this point delisting of PT from the PlayStation Network store last week. You know, this has been a big deal to a lot of people because PT, in a lot of ways, was, for many people, almost like the crown jewel of what is now the current generation of gaming. It was, you know, on a technical level, it was a beautiful experience, amazing graphics, like a real sense of immersion and atmosphere that...
Emphasis on fear.
Yeah, right? That was really added to by the fact that, you know, the tech level. You know, we talk sometimes about how, like, current-gen Musou games are great because you can have even more characters on screen before things start slowing down. But in terms of PT, like, this game was really pretty, and it being really pretty added to how unsettling it was.
Mm-hmm.
So for a lot of people, you know, the fact that it was this really incredible experience, really on a technical level, it was on point. And the fact that, you know, we can't ignore the fact that it was released as a free download completely out of nowhere during the middle of a PlayStation press conference. You know, presumably initially sold, or not sold, but packaged, well, not literally packaged, it was presented in such a fashion as if it wasn't made by Kojima Productions.
Right.
Koji Pro, who we will be calling Koji Pro from here on out in this episode, if they come up again.
Well, if they continue to be a thing, even.
right, if they come up anywhere, ever. You know, basically, they stealth released this game. It was an amazing experience. It brought people over the entire internet together to talk about this game and like, try to share solutions on how to get that elusive Silent Hills teaser trailer at the end. It was just, it was a real experience that people had a really emotional connection to. PT resonated with people. And so, for it to be delisted really opened up a lot of eyes as far as what the digital future of gaming means. You know, we talked last week about supply and demand, and we had discussed how digital distribution sidesteps some of the traditional pitfalls of the retail ecosystem regarding, you know, the actual production of physical product. But the flip side to that is that if a game only exists on a server, as soon as that server no longer has the game, you're shit out of luck. And in the case of PT, where Konami has gone out of their way to make sure, you know, we can't download it even if it's on our download list, we're basically, people who don't already have PT will never have PT. People who had it at one point but deleted it, thinking they'd be safe because it was on their download list. Nope, you do not have this experience, and unless you have a friend or something who owns PT, you're never going to get to have the experience of playing that again.
That's, yeah, really unfortunate, and I mean, possibly, probably intentional, but not cool, you know?
So, I mean, I guess, you know, the first question that gets asked in a conversation like this is, why are games delisted? Slaggy, can you think of a reason why a game would get delisted?
Well, definitely. We've talked about some cases where there have been licensing issues that have prevented, you know, I think there was like a Ferrari game or something that was delisted, or some sort of car game where there was...
Did you mean Outrun 2006?
Is that what one that was?
That was one of them. Outrun 2006 got delisted specifically because of a situation like that.
Yeah, so I mean, I think that definitely comes to mind. You know, just so like a licensing of other content definitely is one. And also, I mean, I'm not too familiar with how the marketplace goes, but I mean, you have to pay a licensing fee to have it listed on the store, right?
You know, I don't know how that works exactly, but I do know that it does cost money to put a game up on the digital storefronts.
So, I mean, there's also that. If it's not profitable, then continuing to have it, you know, on there is taking up space and et cetera, so...
Well, let me ask you this then. My next question here on the show, on our show notes. Why is this a bad thing? Now, I've already told our listeners why I think it's a bad thing. You know, I'm really passionate about digital preservation of these experiences. But, Saigi, in your words, why do you think this is a bad thing?
I mean, I think it's just anytime a game is not available, that's a little piece of gaming history that, you know, is potentially lost.
Yeah, well, you know, and I actually, it's funny because a similar situation happened in the early days of cinema. You know, a lot of early movies no longer exist because the film prints were stored on flammable materials. They were not archived. They were not kept safely. So things were like literally film reels disintegrated that had films that did not exist in any other capacity. Film reels were unfortunately lost in warehouse fires because literally the only copies of them were being stored in flammable fluids and that went up in smoke. And now, you know, we have situations where even some, like, well-loved cinema, like, gems, like, things that are viewed as, like, the high point of cinematic creativity, things like Fritz Lang's Metropolis, where there is, like, an hour of footage that was originally shown at that film's premiere that were cut from it before it went into wide distribution, where, like, that hour was never properly preserved, and so the context in which we can view it now on, like, the most recent restored Blu-ray is, like, literally footage of that being run on, like, a wall, like, a fence wall, because that's the only footage of it that exists.
Yeah.
Like, that's sad. That's not a good thing. And, you know, films now are seen as being culturally and artistically relevant. They are archived. Games, unfortunately, are not there. And to me, PT is the start of having a discussion on a wider scale of why we do need games preservation in some context. And, you know, a part of this discussion that I actually hadn't originally intended to cover, but I'm going to, is the Entertainment Software Association last month actually is going after modders and hackers using the Digital Millennium Copyright Act's anti-circumvention provisions to sort of legally stop people from preserving old games because they feel that it falls under the DMCA's fairly limited definition of hacking, illegal hacking. Basically, there are people in the ESA who are actively attempting to prevent games from being preserved through means of emulators and modded consoles that rip games to, the PC. Basically, there is actively a force saying that these games should not be preserved that way and that it should be up to individual publishers to preserve their games. And my problem is, then we run into, like, what we're seeing with PT. I honestly do not believe we are ever going to see PT again.
Yeah.
And to me, that's tragic. I see that as a real loss, and I really wanted to talk today about these lost experiences. Because, you know, I have always said here on the show, I think pretty much every game has something worth seeing. Some of them, especially some of these older NES games, old Atari games, you know, I literally think they're worth seeing for a minute or two. But I always think there's value in seeing, like, what were these game designers going for? What means did they go to achieve that vision? And now we get to these games like PT, where it's like, PT is a marvel of design. You could learn so much about design, both good and bad, from just playing PT for an hour or two.
Mm-hmm.
And that experience is lost to people, and I think that is absolutely tragic. So, I mean, that sort of sums up why I think delisting is a bad thing. I do appreciate that it is sometimes an inevitability. Quite a few of the games that we're going to discuss here, because I sort of rounded up a list of like 15 notable games that have been delisted that I just think are really unfortunate. Most of them, honestly, do fall prey to what Slagkick was talking about with licensing issues. These are games that had licensed content in one way or another. And so it's easy to believe that in most of these cases, you know, oh, contract ran out for, let's say in Rhythm Party, it had, that was an old Konami dance game using Kinect.
Not that old.
It had Born This Way from Lady Gaga in it. It's not hard to believe that their contract for Born This Way was only for 2 years. And then since the game failed to take off, they didn't re-license it.
Right.
So, presumably, that's why they pulled the game. Mind you, I don't know that for fact. That game had other licensed music. I have no reason to believe that Lady Gaga has her handlers who handle the rights to her songs. I have no reason to believe that they had a contract like that. I'm simply saying that is the most that is sort of, as an example, the most common occurrence for why these delistings happen. Again, that was not me saying that is what happened. I do not know what song it was. I don't even strictly know that it was a song. It could have been some professional person's likeness that they were using in the game. Or it even could have been like Slaggy said, you know, sometimes when games are really, really unpopular, it literally costs more to the publisher to leave it up than to just pull it. So, let's get back on track a little bit. There was a really high-profile delisting that happened early in 2014. Slaggy, we talked about it here on the show back then. Do you remember what I'm talking about?
That was the Deadpool game, right?
Absolutely. Do you wanna talk a little bit about what happened there?
Yeah, we never really got a official, you know, expose on what really happened, but what was notable about Deadpool is that it had only been on the marketplace for about 6 months. And the community manager for Activision had tweeted about Marvel Activision titles no longer being available for download, and that they had, prior to that, gone on sale. So I mean, reading between the lines, you know, presumably had something to do with Marvel licensing.
Basically, that Marvel, presumably at least, was no longer pursuing their contract with Activision. And so they all, as a batch, came up. Deadpool, X-Men Origins, X-Men Destiny, X-Men The Official Game, Spider-Man Friend or Foe, Spider-Man Web of Shadows. All of these games and their related DLC all came down for download on the same day, never to go back up. And in some of these cases, like, there was actually, like, some good games there. I liked that Deadpool game. I thought that Spider-Man Web of Shadows was pretty alright. The, X-Men Origins Wolverine game was actually, like, really legit good. Which is ironic since the movie was absolutely fucking awful. But that game was actually really great. And all of this stuff came down and has never been seen again. To the point that I actually went and bought a disc copy of X-Men Origins Wolverine just because I liked that game so much, and I was upset I couldn't buy it digitally for my PC, so I bought a PC installation disc in 2014. Like, who even does that?
Right.
So, again, you know, we see things come down in a batch like that, and it's just like, oh, well, I guess we see what happened there. You know, something else that happened regarding Marvel games, we quickly saw the DLC for Marvel vs. Capcom 3, which itself now is also no longer available for download from any of the XBLA or PSN download stores. Like, you can find discs of them and they'll still work, but you cannot download MVC3. And even if you get the disc, you can't download the DLC for MVC3. Like, that's actual content to the game that is now lost to people who are just getting into MVC now. I find that really super, super duper unfortunate.
Mm-hmm.
Marvel Ultimate Alliance 2 had that issue too. It had DLC, quite a bit of DLC.
Oh yeah.
It had playable characters of, like, Juggernaut, Magneto, Psylocke, Cable, and all of that DLC came down. You can still get discs for that game pretty easily, but the DLC characters, aside from a brief window in time where they put them back up through, like, a special licensing agreement for, like, a month for people to get in on it, other than that, that content is unplayable, you can't get it otherwise, and I just think it's effing tragic. You know, another game that we lost, and this was a digital only, and this is where it starts to sting, is where we talk about these games that were digital only. They didn't have, like, a disc version that you could go to. We're talking now of Afterburner Climax. We talked about this back in December. This game came out on Xbox Live Arcade and PlayStation Network on April 21st, 2010. People were really excited about it. It wasn't a game that had gotten home ports before, because it was a 2006 arcade game. So, you know, people were really excited. 4 years later, we finally got a home port. Unfortunately, it was delisted on December 16th, which to me really just absolutely sucks. But, you know, Slackick had talked about how the online store version of Outrun was removed due to it having a licensed Ferrari car. Well, there was some speculation about Afterburner Climax because it did have, like, some licensed jets in it. It had, like, Lockheed Martin's stuff in it. And so the assumption is that the contracts for that ran out, and so they had no other option but to remove it. A very similar circumstance actually removed the entire Telltale series Wallace and Gromit's Grand Adventures. People, when talking about Telltale now, you know, we all focus on just, like, their big hits of the last few years, the Walking Dead, Game of Thrones, Fable. But if you think back to when Telltale really started to make their mark on what they do, you know, they had, like, a Sam and Max game, they did a Homestar Runner game, they did a Monkey Island game, and one of the big ones at the time was also their Wallace and Gromit game. Unfortunately, their distribution rights to the Wallace and Gromit IP ran out on January 14th, 2014. Fortunately, they were very open about why this was happening, but since this game didn't get a physical release other than on the Region 2 DVD and Blu-ray releases of the Wallace and Gromit feature A Matter of Loaf and Death, you know, this game is now, for most of us, out of our hands. If we didn't already own it, we can't play it. We can't see this step in Telltale's evolution. And for me, Wallace and Gromit was actually like a really good game. You know, I talk now about how I'm not super into what Telltale does, and that's largely true, but I liked Wallace and Gromit a lot, and I liked this Wallace and Gromit game. I thought it was really cute and fun, and I think that's one that people really miss. There was a similar circumstance with Are You Smarter Than a Fifth Grader, which was based on the, at the time, very popular TV show of the same name. Presumably, the people who made the game lost the license for the game.
To Jeff Foxworthy. The license for Jeff Foxworthy.
I can't say that for sure, but it would be very funny if they had to pull it because they no longer had rights to use Jeff Foxworthy's likeness.
You might be a redneck if you let people stop using your likeness. We're smarter than a fifth grader.
The next game on this list that we were going to talk about was Outrun. That was another big deal because, again, it was a version of Outrun, a well-loved classic Sega IP that people had never played, had no other home ports, but because of that damn Ferrari license, now people can't play it. If you didn't get Outrun while it was available, I hope you live in Japan near an arcade, or you're just not gonna get to play that game ever.
Yeah.
We also, of course, ran into a very similar issue here, and, you know, there a pattern does begin to form a little bit with these titles that we're focusing on. We're focusing on these titles because they're well-known ones, they're ones that we are selves loved quite a bit.
Well, I know you love Smarter Than a Fifth Grader.
Oh, bitch. I picked that for recognizability.
Recognizability.
I can't even with you. But, you know, really, we see a theme here that we're talking primarily so far about circumstances where there is a contract dispute or licensing that runs out, and that remains true for the fairly short-lived Capcom JoJo's Bizarre Adventure HD release. This was delisted, I guess, at the end of 2014, but it was only up for about a year and a half, because that came out just in August of 2012. So, you know, this was a game that people were really passionate about. I certainly was myself. And now, in this day and age, of course, JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, generally speaking, is like a super well-loved franchise now. The last few years, JoJo has been like one of like the most popular anime every season when there's a new season of it.
Mm-hmm.
And this was a really great 2D fighting game. Lots of great sprite work from Capcom. We've talked about the game itself quite a few times here on the show, so I don't want to linger. But it, you know, is really, to me, super, super tragic that this game got pulled so quickly, because it, to me, is one that everyone who is interested in JoJo should get a chance to play it. It's a great Capcom 2D fighter that, you know, we're talking about losing to the ages. You know, in a similar vein, we're also talking about Marvel vs. Capcom 2 New Age of Heroes, which had an HD port that Capcom put a lot of work into. This was one that many people wanted for many years, because Marvel vs. Capcom 2 was hard to find. The PS2 port, which was itself kind of assy anyway. You know, people, I remember that game on eBay used to go for $150. So Capcom, you know, brought this to the digital market. People had a chance to play it for the, what, $9.99 download or whatever, maybe $14.99. And now, nothing. If you want to play MVC2, unless you already have it, you're shit out of luck, which is positively tragic. Similarly, of course, we're looking at, you know, Marvel vs. Capcom Origins, which is the two-pack of Marvel Superheroes and Marvel vs. Capcom Clash of Superheroes. To me, this is one of the most concerning ones, because Marvel Superheroes is already a game that was kind of hard to find, you know, especially in North America. Marvel vs. Capcom, the first one, not super common in North America on the old disc-based systems. So that these games got a second chance at life on the HD, for the HD ports, to me was like a godsend. Like, it really put these games that people were missing, that were important to the MVC legacy and Capcom's 2D fighting game legacy. To me, it was important that these got put back into circulation, people could experience them, and now we're back to, you know, I hope you played it at the time, because otherwise, you're out.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, sometimes I don't really think about that, because even in some of, like, the mall arcade, you can still sometimes see an MVC2 cabinet, or, you know, cabinets running multiple fighting games, and you can still play it. But, you know, really thinking about it, especially, you know, for home releases, you know, to rely on an arcade, that's pretty dire, you know?
Right? Like, we live in North America, and we're talking about having to go to an arcade to play a game? Like, that's wild. You know, we've talked already about Rhythm Party. It was a Kinect rhythm game for Xbox 360 by Konami. It was a Bimani-branded game. I liked it a lot. I actually, at a time, was playing it more than I was playing Dance Central, because, you know, Dance Central was cool in that it was about, like, doing the dances.
Rhythm Party was almost more like a para-para sort of game.
Well, exactly. So the move chart, the beat charts were meant to be done in para-para, you know, like the waving arms going in the, you know, the right place at the right time in rhythm or whatever. And I liked that. I think that it was a lot of fun. And I also would play it with friends who didn't para-para at all. The fundamental philosophy just didn't make sense to them. But they still had a great time with that game, just playing it as, like, I don't know, like the dancing equivalent to, like, Hunt and Pecking. Just, like, throwing their fists out and, like, throwing punches practically to hit, like, the floating orbs, because it was a motion sensor game. It was a lot of fun.
I always kind of thought that it was going to be almost like, looking back now, a PT of a fuller experience. I almost, you know, we think of, like, Dance Central Spotlight, which follows the same model. You know, it was a free download
that they expand on with DLC.
Right. And so it was really disappointing.
Also, Dance Central Spotlight is a $9.99 download.
Okay, but, you know, still, you know, a small initial investment for, you know, a core game. And so, you know, I really thought that this was going to become something bigger, and it didn't.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would agree with that sentiment.
Well, something Bimani, I mean.
Unfortunately, yeah.
Bimani was already dead when we did our rhythm games episode a few years back, and
yeah, Konami keeps kicking that corpse.
Unlike Rock Band, which now we are happy to say is coming back, and Guitar Hero, no more Bimani.
Yeah. Let's see, you know, we also have here the Scott Pilgrim versus the World, the game. This was a huge labor of love, amazing sprite work, soundtrack by Hamaguchi. This was just a game that was super well-received, world-class game. I know a lot of people who liked this game more than they liked the movie. Just a really great brawler of the likes of River City Ransom or Double Dragon, you know, Final Fight, that kind of thing. But with, you know, a persistent character leveling system, getting new moves and abilities, the stats and stuff, just a really great game. I myself have played it with Slagkick quite a few times.
Right.
I love this game, and I think it's an absolute tragedy that it's been delisted. Fortunately, if it's in your download list, you can still download it. That sort of scorched earth nuking isn't something that we necessarily see a lot, like what we're seeing with PT.
Right.
It does happen, though. There are a couple like that. I am going to talk about them as we go through. But still, it's to me really bad that we've lost Scott Pilgrim versus the World, the game, because this is one I've bought multiple times. I have this on multiple platforms, and I just love this game, and it really sucks I can't play it with new people anymore.
Yeah.
You know, along those similar lines was the Konami revival of the Simpsons arcade game. That was on XBLA and PSN for a couple years, but now, you know, presumably they didn't renew the license for the Simpsons, and so it's lost to the ages. Double that with Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Very similar situation. The Konami arcade game, they lost the license, they lost their renewed license. They didn't, you know, extend their contract or whatever. They also did that with the X-Men. Those are three arcade classics that are super well-loved. Really, like, cherished games that are, to me, integral to sort of taking a look back at how the 2D side-scrolling multiplayer brawler evolved in the arcade scene that, you know, if you haven't had this experience now, you may never get to. And you know, I know I keep coming back to that point, but to me, it's just games being delisted is so insidious. It's a really bad thing for these digital-only games to just stop existing. And I don't know what the answer is, shy of outright piracy via MAME or something. And I just, it really, it sucks, man. I hate this. I just have a couple more here. We, there was a Midway published HD port of Smash TV. Smash TV, of course, being an incredibly, incredibly, incredibly influential twin stick shooter. The kind of game that without, we would have never seen Geometry Wars in that ilk. It unfortunately came off of the digital services when Midway closed down. And unfortunately, despite the fact that the Smash TV IP has been repurchased, or, you know, it has been purchased, it was picked up, the game remains sadly unavailable. And, you know, something that sucks in a similar vein is Onimusha 3 Demon Siege. This was available on Steam. This was a Capcom game, the third game in the Onimusha series. You probably gathered that from its name. Onimusha is a series that we all used to love. It was like a samurai spirituality sort of mysticism, magic and stuff, demons take on the Resident Evil formula. This game had a lot of fans. I love the Onimusha series, and while I thought 3 was a little weak overall, I would still love to be able to play it on Steam. Unfortunately, I can't, because it has been delisted. In a similar vein, and the last one I want to talk about here, where I'm really QQing, because we're sort of stepping out of our focus titles, but was Blur. Blur was a car racing game. We've talked about it here on the show quite a bit, actually. It was, could roughly be described as Mario Kart for adults. Not yes. Sure that I think that Mario Kart isn't for adults, but
it was like, just like, you know, not branded with, you wouldn't find Baby Park in this game.
Yeah, it was super futuristic, very, like, high-paced, frantic action, going over weapons and using them, very Mario Kart-style, the way the weapons were handled, which was a good fit. It felt good. It was a great game. And a game that, if you haven't already played it, unless you can find a disc copy, you're out of luck. So I just, you know, really gutted by this, by the loss of these games in particular, because these are all games I've really enjoyed. And so that you know, in case you're asking about, are you smarter than a fifth grader? The answer to why I enjoyed that is because I really fucking love quiz games.
Yeah, you do. And you liked rubbing it in when you were smarter than the fifth grader.
Yeah, because fifth graders are the only people I'm smarter than. But, you know, it's worth mentioning, there were so many games delisted when I was researching this episode. So many. We're talking in the hundreds. Games that people, there are probably games that you own out there in Internet Radio Land. There are probably games that you've bought on your Steam library or your XBLA or your PSN that you don't even know are delisted. And I guess it turns out that, you know, you're lucky you have them because you wouldn't be able to buy them now. And we're not talking about, like, games you've never heard of. Like, some of these games here on this list, this expanded list that I put together, and this is again still highly truncated from the huge, huge, huge list I initially compiled. Like, these are still notable games. Stuff like 1 vs. 100, Apples to Apples, Battlestar Galactica, Settlers of Catan, Burger Time World Tour, Chessmaster Live, Cyberball 2072, Double Dragon for PSN and XBLA. That is not the way forward, Double Dragon. This was the first HD port of
right.
The first Double Dragon. Stuff like Defender, Sega's Golden Axe HD, Gauntlet, which fell into the same unfortunate territory as Smash TV when Midway went under. Stuff like Risk Factions, Ninja Turtles, Turtles in Time Reshelled, Ultimate Mortal Kombat 3, and the Mortal Kombat Collection, which is why you can't right now, on any of the download stores, get an arcade-accurate copy of the original Mortal Kombat games. James Cameron's Avatar the Game, like that you can't really get anywhere.
Forgot about that.
I mean, you know, it wasn't necessarily a great game, but it had cutting-edge 3D tech on the PC platform, and, you know, again, you cannot get it. I'm sure there are people who are buying 3D monitors now who are like, oh, well, that Avatar game was supposed to have great 3D, right? Maybe I'll check that out. Well, no, I'm sorry, you won't. The Wii Virtual Console lost all of the Commodore 64 games it once had. The Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles for NES were on the Wii Virtual Console, but no more.
Yeah.
We've talked here about the ups and downs of Donkey Kong Country. It is presently up and available for download on the Wii U Virtual Console, but part of me is like, for how long? Yoshi's Cookie was famously removed, and this is one where it was not just delisted, but the Wii Virtual Console version of Yoshi's Cookie does not even exist on their server anymore. If it's in your download list, you still cannot download it. So I hope you didn't like Yoshi's Cookie, because LOL, no longer an official way to get it.
Did Did anyone actually like Yoshi's Cookie?
I thought it was all right.
It's better than Yoshi.
Yeah, better than Yoshi. This is one that stings. Clive Barker's Jericho. That's an amazing game, and one that Game Boy superfan Crystal D turned me on to. I just finally played it for the first time. I think I talked about it here on the show, you know, a year or two ago. I was like, what the fuck? This game is hella good. How was this not on my radar? It's, as a game, mechanics-wise, not necessarily super, super good, but the story's incredible. One of the best games in story I've ever played. Stories in game I've ever played. And, you know, again, it was available on Steam. It sure as hell isn't now. And then we've lost stuff like the 007 Legends. Things like the original release of all kinds of games. Stuff like Batman Arkham City, Deus Ex Human Revolution, Grand Theft Autos. Like, I'm sure there are people who feel like the original releases of these games don't need to be retained. Like, oh, it's okay if all that's available is Batman Arkham City Gold or Deus Ex Game of the Year Edition. But to me, especially these two games, which on their re-releases saw huge structural changes to levels, entire encounter designs changed, I think there's a lot of value in preserving these original releases, having them as an option. Like, oh, maybe I don't want to play the redone versions of the bosses in Human Revolution. Well, too effing bad. I don't think that's okay. Even high-profile titles like Darkspore or Fable 3, little less high-profile, but that Family Guy, Back to the Multiverse, game. Like, we have lost like some real great games here. Fable 3, I'm talking about on Steam, the PC port, by the by. I'm sure that is one that you can probably still find for Xbox 360. If not on the download store, then at least in GameStop on disc or whatever. And if you love Fable 3, that might be the thing you want to do, because, again, you know, this stuff, it's scary. These things are going away, and if you feel as passionate about gaming as I do, and you probably do if you've been listening to this show for, you know, we're already an hour deep and you're still listening, which, thank you so, so much, by the by. You know, these are experiences that we're losing. We are losing them, and it's incredibly tragic. And I've saved the best for last, or really the worst for last, and this is moving away from my section on the show roll that was called List, and is now called Horror. And I call this horror because we're talking about a game called Order of War.
Yeah.
Now, Order of War was primarily a multiplayer game, but it did have single-player content. It was published by Square Enix. Unfortunately, the servers all went down on September 1st, 2013. You know, they removed the game from the Steam store, and that wasn't so bad. And then, like, a week later, they removed the game itself from the Steam server, so even if it was on your download list, you couldn't play it anymore. You couldn't download it anymore, which sucks, but is at least manageable. They then took the step of actively removing it from your purchased items and library, which means you could literally have bought Order of War, had it on your hard drive, and been playing, and at one point, Square Enix and Steam flipped a switch, and the game was removed from your computer completely.
Gross.
And this, to me, is the worst-case scenario horror that we're heading for on the current track. A lot of people were worried about PT, something like this happening, where, you know, a lot of games off PlayStation Network have an expiration date, and it just gets refreshed as your PS Plus subscription renews, or as, you know, contracts get extended. There's a precedent set here that it's built in for these games that they can take them away at any time, even if you've paid for them. Now, in certain parts of the world, I know the UK in particular has very protective laws that work in favor of the consumer. We hear about that all the time, where when games get delisted, people end up getting a refund. But for me, like, that's hardly enough. Like, I don't want to lose these experiences. And to me, it really calls into question that, like, how can you not understand and agree with the need for digital preservation?
Yeah, and everything's moving more and more digital. You know, that's maybe one reason why I still like to buy physical copies of games as often as I can, because, you know, who knows when digital is convenient, but I mean, there's also all these, you know, issues. been talking about this, you know, scattered throughout the existence of Game Buoy so far.
Yeah, well, you know, on a related note, we've talked since our inception about all of the DLC songs that Rock Band has lost as contracts expire.
Right.
And that's very much in line with what we're talking about here. You know, we're seeing content effectively stop existing, gameplay experiences that people are losing and being unable to have. And so to me, digital preservation is deeply, deeply, deeply important. I saw Rob Roberts, one of our fellow family members of the Hunty Bunch over at Orange Lounge Radio. He was tweeting, you know, congratulations, facetiously, congratulations, Konami/Sony, you just gave hackers a reason to go for the PS4. You may remember quite famously, the PS3 was hacked when Sony released the patch that removed the other OS operations. People could no longer install Linux onto their PS3s legitimately. And so hackers came for it and busted the safety of the PS3 open. And now, given the PT situation, like, I have to assume hackers are going to come for the PS4, and as much as I think a console getting hacked open can be a bad thing, I'm practically praying for the PS4 to get busted open, because I don't want to lose PT. After all, you know, we all have it on our hard drives, those of us that knew that this was coming. Most of us downloaded it to make sure we have it. But what's going to happen when your hard drive breaks down and you can no longer go to your download list to grab it? Bam, you have lost it. What happens when you just want to pull out your hard drive to replace it with a newer, higher capacity one?
Can't Bam. Do it.
Can't re-download PT, you've lost it. So there's a real problem here, and there is no real solution in sight. And as I often bring these things up, you know, I want to encourage you to think about these things. When you see news of a game getting delisted, I encourage you, you know, reach out to Konami and say, you know, you don't have to be like, at Konami, fuck you, give me PT. But you can't.
Or even worse,
like,
do not death threat or anything.
Right, exactly. You know, it's like we were talking about earlier, bomb threats are never okay, death threats are never okay, but you can communicate to them. You can let them know, I buy your products. I don't want to lose these games. And just make your voice heard. And if nothing else, make sure that, you know, publishers and developers know that we want these experiences. Publishers need to know we don't want to lose them forever. And devs need to know, you know, we appreciate these things. Like, it sucks that your work is being deleted from existence effectively. Like, that sucks. So, digital preservation. Something super, super, super important to me. And again, you know, if you're passionate about this hobby, it's something I'd suggest you get passionate about, because it's just a matter of time before your favorite game gets removed from existence. And probably you don't want that. Slaggy, let's move into wrapping this up. We've gone a long way. I've been ranting a lot. My voice is like, fuck you, Spike! What are your favorite delisted games?
I mean, definitely Scott Pilgrim would have to, you know, take the cake. It was just, like, such a great homage to, like you said, the beat-em-up brawlers of days of yore. And, you know, just really, just a wonderful package. Hey. And on a similar note, like, you know, the TMNT arcade game, Simpsons Arcade, you know, these arcade games, I kind of didn't even stop to think, oh, yeah, now you've basically got to, you know, emulate them. If you're lucky, you have, like, a MAME cabinet or something. But, you know, that was a big deal for me, for example, when I was like, hey, I got an Xbox. I could play with Captain Spike, Xbox 360 rather, and I could play with Captain Spike and play the beloved TMNT arcade game. And, you know, now that's not a possibility for a lot of people.
Yeah, absolutely.
I do have to say that, and, you know, I'm a little hopeful that these games will not be lost to the ethers forever, but, you know, especially now that PT has been pulled intentionally, you know, companies and creators might, you know, use that as leverage almost.
Yeah, and I mean, for me, this has been the best part of the PT situation, which I think is almost universally awful. Like, the one good side to me is that I feel like people are opening their eyes now about how ephemeral these digital experiences can be. And, you know, I hope for permanence in these games. I hope that they remain available. I hope that developers, publishers become more communicative about when and why we're losing them. As far as my favorite delisted games go, it probably won't surprise anyone to hear me say that it's probably JoJo's Bizarre Adventure HD. It could be MVC2. Otherwise, I'd probably go with Scott Pilgrim. But the reality here, of course, is that all of these games, even the ones that I don't like, stuff like, you know, I didn't list it it here, but that awful free download Yaris promo game.
That's oh my been God. Listed.
Like, yeah, it was effing awful, but I had a great time playing it with, you know, my old ex and Slagkick. Like, we would just hang out and play Yaris because it was awful, but it was so hilariously bad. It was the absolute embodiment of Kusoge. And we may have even talked about it when we talked about Kusoge here on the show some number of years back. But Slaggy, I know that we had asked our fans out there in Internet Radio Land, our lovely and beautiful listeners, about their favorite delisted games. And my understanding is we did get a couple of hits. So, do you want to read them to me?
Over on our social links, we asked, this week with PT in mind, we're talking about the lost gems of the digital age. Do you have any delisted games? Gamer Fox said, I actually don't know many of these, excited to listen. Your Enzyme brought up a great one that I had, you know, maybe blocked out of memory, saying, I remember the one day all PS1 games magically worked on Vita. Sadness overwhelmed the internet 18 hours later when it stopped. Frowny face.
Yeah, right? And that's a really interesting take because I wasn't even thinking about that. But, you know, we also deal with the fact that, you know, some of these games have situations where they are updated and lose compatibility, and there's no focus on like, retaining legacy support for some of this stuff. In the case of the PS Vita kerfuffle where all PS1 games were playable in that initial window, it still baffles me, like, why these games worked perfect? Why is Sony doing this? And I'm sure it has something to do with, like, oh, the license for this was for play on PSP and PS3, but not Vita, so you can't do it. But, like, Jesus, maybe that's something you need to fight for. Like, that's important. Yeah, no, but no, that was actually a great response. I wasn't even really thinking about that in this context. And if that's it, you know, I guess, you know, I really want to leave off here. You know, the last note here I wanted to talk about, it said future outlook, but I think I've made that kind of obvious. I fear our future outlook is losing these games at any time with a shitty little message from a publisher saying, oh, sorry, we're taking this game down. Please talk to Steam, Microsoft, Sony, Nintendo if you want a refund, bye, and then never being able to play a game I love again.
Pudgy died on the way back to his home planet.
Right? This is a real thing. It has happened. There is precedent. This isn't just mindless speculation and paranoia and fretting. So that is my worst case. But again, you know, I'm very hopeful with the PT kerfuffle that people are going to start demanding a little more permanence in terms of availability. My understanding with PT is that the removal may have something to do with the likeness of Norman Reedus in the game. But I don't know that I buy that, because it's only been up for, what, like 9 months? Who signs a likeness contract for 9 months? So I don't know that I buy that necessarily. But again, if that is the reason PT came down, then I can appreciate why it's not still up. I can appreciate why there's not permanence. But the flip side to that is I need a little more communication. When I'm losing an experience, especially one that I feel so strongly about as I felt about PT, and let's be fair, man, over the last year, since PT came out back in last August, I think we've probably talked about PT in some context basically every other episode. We talk about that game a lot. That was a game I really loved, I really passionately connected with. I thought it was an incredible experience. I think it's really shitty that Konami, if they cannot give me the permanence of availability that I require or prefer, that they can't communicate with me openly about why I'm losing this.
But, you know, on the other hand, we have, what was it, Moby Games, who basically offered over 2,000 DOS games available in your browser, so.
And that's cool. I mean, I don't think it was an official effort, but it was. That one was. And that's cool. And that's kind of the thing I'm talking about. Like, games aren't to the point, like, new games aren't to the point where that can happen yet. And that is my fear right now. We're not gonna see PT playable in your browser online for 10 years. And that sucks. Like, don't make me wait 10 years until people can emulate, you know, PS4 in order to play PT. That sucks.
Oh, no, I mean Internet Archive.
Oh, yeah, I followed what you meant.
I was looking at Moby Games entries for some of these things.
Yeah, and of course, that's not a problem. do you have anything else to say about the future outlook, Slaggy?
I hope that it's not as bad as it seems it may be.
All right, well, then let's talk about some rumors.
Rumor has it.
All right, this first one is a huge and super exciting thing. Basically, Koji Igarashi-san appears to be behind a teaser website that went up last week called SwordOrWhip.com. While there on Sword or Whip, you have a man in a suit on a throne very reminiscent of the Castlevania Dracula throne, who basically he wants you to pick between a sword and a whip. And when you pick one, he teases you and gives you some vague implications of a reveal that's going to be occurring on May 11th from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. Pacific. As this event has gone on and on and on and on, we have got more and more information to the point that we now have an idea of what's going to be happening. This appears to be the long-awaited Koji Igarashi Kickstarter project that was teased last year at PAX.
What a wonderful night to have a KS.
I was going
to
say, you may recall the What a Wonderful Night to Have a KS tease that we got. The hashtag that's being used for this is Igavania Mania. It's apparently an event that's going to be hosted on Twitch by Kinda Funny Games. I would expect to be hearing a lot about this over the coming weeks. We will definitely be talking about it if we record next weekend. This is going to be a real big deal for us. In the meantime, of course, you can stay focused on my personal Twitter over at @SpikePoint, because I'm definitely going to be talking a lot about this as more news comes out. We're only keeping it under the rumor because, strictly speaking, we do not know that this is going to be the What a Wonderful Night to Have a KS project. And despite the fact that we know some kind of Koji Igarashi-san announcement is being made tomorrow, it's still not enough for me to just count it as news.
Yeah.
We also had a PlayStation 4 listing for Tales of Azestria on Best Buy's website. We have seen Best Buy leak a considerable number of titles in the last year, so while a PlayStation 4 port of Tales of Azestria has not been officially announced by Bandai Namco, it does seem pretty likely that it's something we're going to be seeing down the line. Do you have anything else for us, Slaggy?
Nope.
All right, well then let's talk about Smash a little bit. More specifically, let me direct you to two articles about video games that I highly recommend you read. The first is an article from 2014, actually, so we're throwing back a little bit. This was run on Eurogamer.net, and it is titled The Case of the Disappearing Video Game.
How timely.
I picked it very specifically for the reasons that you might expect, relating to this show's theme. But if you want to sort of read a little bit about Frank Cifaldi's efforts as a video game archivist and historian, he runs Lost Levels, which we've talked about here on the show. It's a site specifically about unreleased video games. He has also focused on, the sort of preservation of digital titles.
Yeah.
So it's a really cool read. I think it's really important for people who care about this topic. I think that this is a great article to do a little further reading with. The other article I wanted to point you toward, and it also relates to what we're talking about here, this was a Lee Alexander article that she wrote for BoingBoing.net. I should not assume gender. That Lee Alexander wrote for BoingBoing.net, called Why Silent Hill Mattered, On the End of a Great Mad Era for Video Games. And this is an editorial piece that is about basically what Silent Hill meant for Lee Alexander as a gamer, what it meant for developers and publishers to some degree, and what it meant to its fans, and why we're losing so much with what's going on with Konami and Silent Hill as a franchise right now. It's a great read. I highly, highly, highly recommend it. We're going to be linking to both of these articles over at GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
And unless we have anything else for Smashes, let's begin the wrap-up, Slaggy.
I just wanted to really quickly clarify. And just to clarify, Lee Alexander does use female-gendered pronouns, so you were not in the wrong.
Oh, good. All right. Well, excellent then. Well, let's talk about what we're playing.
I said, hey, what's going on?
All Let's see. This week, I have been playing Super Mario Galaxy 2. I'm working on doing a 120 star run on this game because I've never done that. I'm quite enjoying it. I think that Mario Galaxy and Mario Galaxy 2 are incredible games. I have done all 121 or whatever on the first Galaxy. I have not on Galaxy 2. When it came out in my life, I was not able to devote the time to it that I prefer to give to games, and it sort of fell into my backlog after I had gotten the first 20 stars or so. So, I'm now like 80 stars in, I'm loving it, loving every minute of it. It's blowing my mind with its game design and level design, and I'm super, super excited to keep on keeping on. I've also been playing Chroma Squad. We've talked about this here on the show. It's a game I backed on Kickstarter. It's a tactics RPG with sim elements. You're basically running a Sentai TV studio, and like the episodes are done in the style of like a tactical battle, and you have like criteria like, oh, Red Ranger needs to do Prisma Kick on giant monster before anyone else attacks it or what have you. And basically you're just trying to like build up through the sim elements like a large production studio so that you can produce like more expansive and big episodes.
Aww.
It's a really cool concept with a really funny script. I'm constantly laughing at the in-game references, including one really notable Backstreet Boys reference that made me fucking lose my shit.
What was it?
There's just something involving I Want It That Way.
I want it that way. Tell me why. Ain't nothing but a heartbreak.
Let's see, yesterday I did a 99.8% run of Castlevania Aria of Sorrow.
Yeah, you did.
I did that so that Slykick could see it because he doesn't really play these Metroidvanias himself the way, you know, to the extent that I do. And I really wanted to discuss game design in those games. And, you know, I really wanted to kind of communicate how excited I am for Igavania Mania.
Yeah, it was a really well-designed game.
Right? Yeah, it's a great game.
Like, I really appreciated the way that, you know, I mean, you know, in traditional Metroidvania style, you know, that, I mean, just really watching it all unfold in one playthrough, how, you know, oh, I'm coming back now that I have these abilities, and I can do something I didn't do before. And hey, by the way, these things that were going to kill me are not killing me anymore.
Well,
that's what you were doing.
Yeah, so that was a lot of fun. It was also fun because I hadn't played Aria of Sorrow in like 10 years, so like it was not like an efficient like speed run playthrough. It was a little sloppy at times.
Yeah, you haven't been playing Aria of Sorrow. You've been playing Samsa of Despair and Bran of Terror.
I also played the global test run, or whatever the heck
global it's test fire.
Global test fire of Splatoon. I was able to play two sessions of it, so I got like 2 hours in, basically. And, you know, Splatoon for me, while playing it, it basically went from a, I'll look into this at some point, to a day one must-buy, will pre-order, I need more. I just think it's a tremendous game, I think it's super well-designed, I think it's a lot of fun, I am absolutely in for more, and I need it right meow. Slaggy, what did you play?
I'm gonna go ahead and start off with Splatoon Global Test Fire as well, because I got to play a little bit, and loving the paint roller. I thought that the paint roller definitely adds an interesting element to, you know, what is essentially a third-person shooter because you're not shooting. And I really enjoyed that as someone who's not necessarily the best at shooting. I also really enjoyed it, and, you know, Nintendo's really backing this and really trying to make it a thing, capital letters, and I really hope it does find success. I'm probably one of the people counted in the drop subscriptions because I had let my WoW subscription lapse, not due to lack of interest, just, you know, kind of got too busy and, you know, I was only paying month by month and not subscribing. So, unfortunately, my time had lapsed. I came back into the game and, realized that I had been really close to finally being able to justify making a chopper, you know, not the 100,000 gold one that was from the Azeroth Choppers miniseries, but, you know, the original one from Wrath of the Lich King. So I finally made my WoW motorcycle, and I'm happy for that. And I'm looking forward to gear up for, you know, literally and figuratively gear up for the next patch, whenever that may drop. I've been playing some more Smash. I, on a whim, decided to play King DDD. I think it's because I was eating pinguinos, which are the Latin American version of Hostess cupcakes. I think that's how it came up. And I was like, I'm going to play a pinguino. And because Piplup's not in the game, I played as DDD and actually really was kind of starting to feel it. Other than that,
I'm really feeling it.
Right? Other than that, I rolled a Sith Sorcerer on Star Wars The Old Republic and really having a lot of fun. I think the race is the Ratateki. They're like gray and they have like tattoos and piercings and stuff. And so I have a really badass Sith Sorcerer who's using Force Lightning and just generally being evil and accumulating dark side points. And, you know, just really cementing that coming back to the Old Republic was a great decision. And I'm also really glad that I decided to drop some subscription money on it. I went ahead and did that, you know, and I logged on for May the 4th Be With You, so I get the 12 times experience so that I can just do the story campaign only and level up super fast. And I'm excited. I can't wait to play more of my Sith Sorcerer.
Awesome. Yeah, you know, I also rolled a character on a new server of Old Republic with you. I also rolled a new character on an old server I was on. Man, I effing love that game. I had totally forgotten about how much I enjoy it.
Yeah, it's probably my second favorite MMO, only because I don't have the engagement with Final Fantasy MMOs that you and many others have.
Yeah, no, I would definitely, for me, there's almost like a holy trinity involved of WoW, Fixiv, and Old Republic. Like, I think all three of them are really unique and great, great, well-designed MMOs.
And I mean, just like, further cementing the BioWare love, really. It was a little tragic that game went free-to-play, but you know, that just means that more people can play, and there's still lots of benefits for subscribers, and I think it's definitely a game worth subscribing to, unlike, you know, Lord of the Rings Online.
Hey, no need to be shady.
Rift.
We just had a leak of news here, so this is like super, super hot off the presses.
Strictly speaking,
it's rumor. This is from a leaked internal document from LEGO. They are mock-ups of LEGO Dimensions. Products. So LEGO Dimensions, of course, is the upcoming toy-to-life genre game in the LEGO world, I guess.
The Legoverse.
The Legoverse. Ooh, girl.
The LEGO Dimension. Duh.
And this actually comes from LEGO's website itself, even though they're clearly placeholder materials, like, that aren't finalized. There's a lot of spelling errors. But this is, like, a real document on their site that they're apparently upkeeping. It includes Simpsons, Back to the Future, Portal 2,
and
Doctor Who.
Oh, Lon Johnson.
So, you know, we'll link this file on GameBuie.org.
GameBuie.org.
But to some degree, I fear it may come down before you get to it. Either way, this is exciting, and this for me, actually, I mean, I was not really planning to get LEGO Dimensions. I love LEGO, but I already have Disney Infinity, I already have a huge amiibo collection, but dude, for Portal 2 and Doctor Who, I'm in like Flynn.
Right.
So that's really,
I think, really you'll be in like Flynn for Disney Infinity 3.0.
Oh, girl. All right. Well, we did our question of the week social links, but do we have any general social links?
We got a tweet from Crystal Ideas saying, I was in the chart room listening. She works at a doctor's office. When you did your sign off, I squeed. The surgeon asked if I was okay.
Aww. Is that it?
Yep. That's it for this week. But if you'd like to get in touch with us, we love your feedback. We love your iTunes subscriptions, ratings, and reviews. Just do an iTunes search for Game Buie.
GameBuie.
You know, you could also do the podcast apps or whatever you do on the iPhones and the iPods these days. We like your Facebook likes. We're over on Facebook.com/GameBuie.
Facebook.com/GameBuie.
And we effing love Twitter.
We effing love Twitter.
And Twitter is the place where you can find us at GameBuie.org with the .org spelled out D-O-T-O-R-G.
At GameBuie.org. .org is spelled out D-O-T-O-R-G.
And Tumblr, Google Plus, and Stitcher Radio, and GameBuie.org. You can find all our social links, all of our complete episode archive, and even some game bloggies as well. Well, currently one game bloggy, but, you know, hopefully
there will
soon.
Be more.
I think it's time to do that outro lewd.
Indeed. So, you just gave everyone our links. I guess it's time for my shout-outs, huh?
Yep.
As ever and always, first up, I'd like to guide you toward VG Realness, serving up a weekly dose of gaming chit-chat among friends, as well as the Game Over Takeover, your one-stop shop to go to for geekery galore. I'd be remiss not to mention Orange Lounge Radio, where every gamer has a voice, and from whom I steal ever so many of my cues. I'd also like you to check out the Nintendo Fun Club, your destination for platformers, positivity, and pop punk, as well as their sister effort, Enos Lives, which is a focus on many well-loved PlayStation 1 games. I believe this summer they're doing a focus on all of the Summer of Adventure Square Enix PS1 games.
Oh, wow.
That is going to be a lot of fun to listen to, and I cannot wait. I also want to point you in the direction of X Nation over at http://culturalwormhole.blogspot.com, an awesome podcast focusing on Marvel's Mighty Mutants, the X-Men, as well as their sister show, which is video game-centric, the Nintendo Love Fest, which I believe just had a new episode go up yesterday, or probably last week by the time you get to us. I also, of course, would like to mention Reading is Fundamental, which is Slagkick's show about RuPaul's Drag Race, featuring myself, Delvin from VG Realness, and Rob Roberts from Orange Lounge Radio. Of course, if you're into Star Trek, I suggest you check out the Starboard Power Coupling Podcast, a Star Trek podcast you hope doesn't fail, and Tables, Ladders, and Podcast, a professional wrestling podcast for the common man. Slaggy, why don't you take us to a game bar?
Game Bar is the gay video game prairie home companion and a part of the Hunty Bunch. Also part of the Hunty Bunch is Koopa Club. That's Koopa with a Q, Club with a K. Koopa Club is an award-winning podcast about Nintendo and gaming with an LGBT twist. I believe the award was from their mothers. Over on the Voice of Geeks Network, you can listen to some wonderful shows, including Orange Lounge Radio, that Captain Spike mentioned, as well as Horde House, the place for all things online gaming but never too seriously, featuring Rob Roberts, Grandpa, and Extifer. And Girls Gone Wow, where Syl and her friends give you a female's perspective on the world's most popular MMO, even when it loses 3.1 million subscribers. I'd like to also direct you in the attention of...
Didn't it lose 2.9 million subscribers?
Whatever, something like that. It was about 3 million.
LOL math.
I'd like to also direct you to the attention of the Multitap podcast over on FistfulPotions.com. The Multitap podcast is a video game discussion in the round about gaming then and gaming now. And last but certainly not least, I'd like to direct you to La Palanca podcast, Puri para gay gamers, Latino Americanos, and Espanol. As ever and always, our wonderful theme music was done by Zelda Reorchestrated, the project that aimed to reorchestrate beautiful Zelda music into gorgeous symphonic sound. They unfortunately closed their doors a while back, and we will forever be pouring out a 40 for them. We want to thank you, Zelda Reorchestrated, because now people hear our theme music and think of Game Buoy, even if they're at the Zelda concert or playing Wind Waker. Woohoo!
All right, our lovely and beautiful listeners, thank you so much for spending this lovely Sunday afternoon with us. I hope you've enjoyed listening to us as much as we've enjoyed talking. We have some interesting stuff coming up for you coming soon. And, you know, we're practically at the point of counting down to E3, so please look forward to that. Until next time, though, keep gaming, keep thinking, and I didn't have anything prepared this week.
What game's that from?
Kiss my ass! Are you ready?
Ready, Freddy.
Crazy little thing called love.
Episode 79. D-Rezzed. A look at...
Yeah, over on our social links, we...
Baby.
Oh, Lom Johnson.